Welcome to Moonbeaming, a podcast about magic, creativity, the tarot, lunar living, and more. I'm your host, Sarah Faith Gottesdiener, and I'm so happy you're here. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Moonbeaming. This is a space where we explore where the seen and unseen intersect, archetypes, magic, creativity, the moon, of course, and having honest, heartfelt conversations you probably won't find anywhere else. You are here with me, Sarah Faith Gottesdiener, for another incredible episode with an incredible guest. I only have a few announcements today. The first is I've got a new workshop. It's available for immediate download. I can't believe I forgot to mention it here because it came out a while ago, but it's been a little blurry around these parts. The workshop is what I'm so excited about because it's like one of my favorite subjects. It's called Honoring the Dark Moon. And it came about because when I wrote my book, there's a whole chapter on the dark moon. There's a whole chapter on dark moon magic, but I had so much more material, especially with the dark moon, especially because there's not a lot of information out there about it. And so I took a lot of the stuff that didn't make it in, along with some new things, and created this workshop. It is a downloadable workshop about healing from trauma, intense excavation, being with the wilder or more shadowy aspects of ourselves, and how the dark moon is magical, how it resonates to mystery and the unknown. I go deep into some of the goddesses that are associated with the dark moon, deep into the tarot of the dark moon. And I share a technique I use called tarot sequencing that has helped me so much. It also includes a meditation as well as worksheets. The workshop itself, which is a video, you can also just listen to it. It's almost 2 hours, y'all. It is deep and rich and comprehensive. And if you've wanted to learn more about the dark moon, if you are in a dark moon phase, then this is the workshop for you. We are in the dark moon phase of the year. We're right before the solstice. This is the time to really turn inwards and really think about the parts of ourselves that we've maybe ostracized, the shadowy parts of ourselves that are actually the gold, the parts that helped us survive. And we can collaborate with those parts to go deeper within and then to expand even more. So I highly recommend checking it out. I don't really think there's another, I didn't really look, but I don't think there's another workshop out there like this anywhere. So if you are a dark moon baby like I am, you will want to scoop that up. The second bit of news I want to share is that December 15th is the last day to buy something from our store and have it shipped in 2021. Sounds wild. It's right around the corner. Here we are. So you've got about a week to place an order for your Many Moons planner. Otherwise, you can buy it, but we will not be shipping it out until December 5th. So you've been warned. We don't want you to miss out. We want you to get the planner. The digital download you'll get immediately so you can purchase anytime. That's all the news. That's all the news from the studio. And now we are moving on to today's show. This week on the podcast, I got a chance to speak with the one and only Evian Whitney. They are a sexuality doula and a writer and a podcaster. Evian's work focuses on decolonizing, unshaming, and liberating sexuality at the intersection of identity, pleasure, and embodiment. For the last decade, Whitney has dedicated herself to sex education and sexual activism by holding healing space for women, femmes, and non-binary folks to reclaim their unique sexual expressions and reconnect to their sensual bodies via personal sessions, workshops, and retreats. I love their podcast. It's called The Sensual Self. I will link it. And they are also one of the incredible contributors to the 2022 Many Moons Planner. Evian also just released a book. Sensual Self is a self-guided journal that will help you connect to your body and discover your pleasure one prompt at a time. Are you ready? I'm ready. I'm more than ready. My body is ready. We're going to put the link to that in the show notes. It just came out, so please get yourself a copy if you resonated with this conversation. The first week of sales and the first month of sales are really important to authors, so let's support Evian and their work. Evian has the best energy. They are so smart and so compassionate and so embodied. Having this conversation with them inspired me so much more to be present and in my body and to turn towards pleasure. And I ended up getting vulnerable because they are so vulnerable. We talk about what coming out as non-binary has helped them with and showed them, how Evian healed from purity culture to embrace their calling as a sexuality doula. And we highlighted the magic that exists for us when we go outside of the binary. A very lover's year theme, very 2022 theme, if I do say so myself. If you're interested in any of this, then for sure this episode is for you. If you want to know how on earth does sexuality intersect with intuition, liberation, and healing, stay tuned. If you also want to think about some ways to love yourself more, then this episode is also for you because we talk about that. This episode opened me up. It gave me so much food for thought. I know it will for you as well. Enjoy. Hello, hello, everyone. I have the most special guest with me here today. This is someone who I've admired for so long. I've been really inspired by their work, and I cannot wait for all of you to hear their wisdom and their beautiful voice. I'm a big fan of their podcast as well. I would love to welcome onto Moonbeaming Evian Whitney. Welcome.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me.
I was hoping you could start off just by sharing a bit about what you do, what your work involves, just so the listeners can be familiar if they're not.
Yeah, I am a sexuality doula and a sex educator. As a sexuality doula, what I help people with is this transition from some form of sexual confusion, sexual fear, or I think there's this concept of like sexual disconnection, like maybe they're not connected to themselves sexually, whatever that means for them. And so with education and guidance and facilitation and a lot of handholding, I walk people through that transition from that space into a space of sexual liberation, into a space of gender confidence. A lot of my work isn't just about the sexual, it's also about sensuality and coming into the body and also coming into the various identities that we hold within ourselves at any given moment. So Yeah, that's what I do. And I have a book coming out that I'm really excited about that is about sensuality and connecting to the body. And yeah, what else? I mean, I'm based in Los Angeles, really happy to be back home and very happy to be on this podcast with you. I'm a big fan.
I have a lot of questions though around that. I've got some like larger ones and a little bit more granular. So what you kind of do is then you coach folks one-on-one and also I'm guessing in classes and groups and things. So you educate and then you do more intimate one-on-one. And so is it that like where just like out of curiosity, where do you begin? I know, of course, you probably begin where the person is, but in terms of like the first thing that came up for me as you were speaking was it feels like you're kind of giving people permission to be with their desire.
Yes. Yeah. The first place that I start with my work is typically around the body, and what relationship they have with their body and pleasure. I think folks think of my work and they might think that I'm talking about dildos and vibrators and stuff like that, which is great, you know, if that's your thing. But I'm really more interested in getting folks really thinking about their sexual and sensual selves on a long-term basis, not just like, what is this thing that I can get right now that is going to satisfy this urge or this this desire that I have for the moment? Like, I really want for folks to dive as deep as possible and get into the fluidity and the authenticity of who they are as sensual and sexual beings. And so, yeah, the first place I typically start is by asking them what their relationship is to their body, because you know, we have sex with our bodies. We experience sensuality with our bodies. And it doesn't make sense for me to put a lot of importance on what is external, you know, like the orgasm and the sex toys and stuff like that. I want to know what is happening in the landscape of your emotional body. You know, what is happening in the landscape of your sensual body? Where do you go when you're having sex with someone and you say that you are totally in your head? Where does your mind go? Like, I'm really interested in what's happening internally for folks, and really getting to the root of any traumatic experiences that they've had, any negative narratives they have about their body, their sexuality, their gender, the way that a relationship structure or their sexuality should look like. I think that the work that I do, I really want to like build a foundation for folks that is long lasting, and that even if they change in 2 years and they're like, I no longer identify as this, they'll always be able to find an anchor in the truth of who they are authentically.
That's so amazing. I also think that it's so important for us to define our sexuality and our sensuality for us.
Yes.
Like not in relation, like we all are in relationship, right? I'm here for relationships. I'm here for interdependence. But in terms of, I think also people who have been socialized to have their sexuality be a weapon or a transaction or not theirs. And I'm not even talking about a specific gender. Right. I'm talking about everybody, you know, like in our culture. So I think that it's so fascinating and so like integral to start like inside of you for you. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think a lot of us aren't educated in that way.
Yeah.
Like we're taught to kind of think we're for someone else, or our sexuality only exists when there's someone else in the room or the bed, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's actually why I got started doing the work that I do. It wasn't from a place of trying to fix myself for my relationship. I mean, that there was obviously a part of that, but I recognized that the sexual issues that I had at the time and the ways that I was trying to fix them were centered around this idea that like, you got to do it for someone else. Like your sexuality doesn't belong to you. It belongs to your partner. It belongs to the church. It belongs to, like, there are so many things that led me to believe that I didn't have ownership or agency over my sexuality. And because of that, there wasn't space for me to be curious about it. There wasn't space for me to carve my own path toward what I am or who I am as a sexual being. It was like, well, this is what culture says that you should be. This is what society says that your sexuality should look like. This is what a sexually liberated person looks like. And so I started this work as a sexuality doula and a sex educator, not really knowing what the fuck I was doing and just really wanting to like figure out, okay, like who am I? Like everyone's trying to tell me who I should be, but who do I want to be? And what would it look like for me to create my own rules and my own legacy around what my sexuality, my gender, my the way that I am in operation with my religion. I was about to say religion, but sure, in relationship with my religion, but also in my relationships, you know? Yeah. And so a lot of my work is based on those principles. Like I want for folks to feel like they are the expert of their own sexuality, that they are the expert of their own body, their own gender expression, their own sensuality. And that expertise comes with taking time to figure that out within yourself, to like carve out space for you to ask these questions and really define what do I want sex to look like? What do I want my sexuality to feel like? When I'm having sex, how do I want to feel? And what sort of interactions do I want to have with my sexual partners? And if sex isn't on the table, how do I want to prioritize pleasure in my own body? You know, how do I want to figure out the nuances in the ways that my sensuality shows up? Like, these are all really incredible questions that people don't really ask us. They just sort of, in my experience, when it came to sex, it was like, I was raised in purity culture, abstinence only. And so it was like, don't have sex. But when you do, you have to have it all together. Like suddenly something's going to click inside of you and you're going to be able to have the best sex ever after 20 years of being told that you shouldn't have sex until this particular moment. And I think because of that teaching, I wasn't given the space to really think about and like ask these questions. It was almost sort of assumed that like, oh yeah, everyone, sex is natural, you know, like, and yeah, if you're not operating with it within this like space of being natural or whatever, then there's something wrong with you. And so my work is just trying to normalize what people go through and to let them know that you're not alone. And also that like you have the answers. You just have to take the time to and trust yourself that you'll be able to find them.
Yes, I love that so much. Especially as you were speaking, I just was thinking about how if only we just talked about these things and normalized things like not having it all together or not being normal, or even like not to get into hard territory. But of course, I can only think about myself. Like, you know, I have a lot of sexual trauma, right? Mm-hmm. Like I have been assaulted, you know, other things have happened. Even just sort of being queer, like being a queer femme, like sort of like being invisible in some spaces and like not really seen in others. I don't know. We all have our stuff, right? We all have our individual stuff. It's just so refreshing to be talking about it and to be like, it's so refreshing to hear you speaking about this in such open terms. And I'm just sort of curious, was it always this sort of easy for you to share and to talk about it? Or was that kind of part of the healing or part of the process?
You know, I'm kind of a weirdo in that it is easy for me to talk about this kind of stuff. I don't know. I think because it's very natural for me to talk about my own process when I feel like it's something that's very alive within me. And not because like I really want to share, but it's just such a big component of where I'm at, you know? And for a long time, sex has been that for me. It's been this point of contention. It's been this place of curiosity. It's also been this place of like forbiddenness. And, you know, there's a lot of layers to sex and sexuality because I also have been someone that has experienced sexual trauma and violation, as well as like the trauma and violation of being raised in purity culture. So those things really impacted the way that I see sex, even still today. I mean, I still do battle with a lot of these voices because they've been with me longer than I've been alive at this point. And I don't know. I think because I was raised in such a like, don't talk about it. Sex is not something that you should have. You know, it's something that you should be ashamed of, and particularly sex that you cultivate within yourself, you know, like your own sexuality. I'm like, okay, I've spent so many years not talking about it. I want to talk about it. Like, let's talk about it, you know, and not as a way to be bawdy about it or braggadocious. I just really want to demystify and unshame these conversations and not come to these conversations from a place of like, I'm an expert, I know everything, but more so to be like, let's just be curious, because my belief is that like we are constantly changing all the time in every aspect of our lives, but particularly within our sexuality. Like I feel that folks should be constantly educating themselves sexually, even if they've had however many partners and they've been having sex for a number of time. Like when you're 60, I hope that you're still looking at educating yourself sexually, because we're constantly shifting and changing. And so I want for this to be a constant conversation and for folks to feel like, just as we can talk about our health, just as we can talk about our spirituality, I want for us to also be in constant conversation with our sexual and sensual selves.
I love that so much. I have a lot of chronic illness and like a lot of injuries and things. And so being in my body isn't like the funnest usually, you know? And so there's always that overlap for me with like, it's hard for me sometimes to feel sexual, even like sexy, even to myself when I'm like in a lot of pain. And I was curious, I'm sure this comes up, I'm sure you have clients, you know, what is your suggestion for folks who maybe it's not actual like sensation pain, but maybe it's trauma, or maybe it's like not feeling safe, or maybe it's feeling disassociated. What do you kind of gently suggest to folks that they sort of try when they're, when they have a kind of disjointed relationship with their body?
Yeah, that comes up a lot in my work. It also comes up a lot for me as well. You know, I mean, being Black and living in this world, being queer, being non-binary, like there's so many things that I feel like I'm fighting against. And that, I mean, we live in a really unsexy world. You know what I mean? And sometimes it's really difficult. I mean, I know that there are some folks that are like, that makes the sex even better, just knowing that, you know, we're all going to die. But for me, it's like, that it's just too much. So I feel that. I really feel that. I have a couple of things. I think the first thing is just, I want to encourage folks to gently be curious about what is coming up for them. Like, you know, I'm just thinking about dissociation, you know, like, or this feeling of safety. Like, what about sex or sensuality or sexuality feels unsafe to you? And just like, and not answering that question from a place of judgment or being like, I have to figure out the answer, but just checking in with yourself and seeing what's there, seeing what comes up. And that isn't a way to be like, okay, if I get this answer, that means that I'll have sex now. It's more like, again, kind of what I was speaking to earlier about being in constant conversation with yourself around this. So I think that it's always a plus to try to create that conversation and just be curious, like, okay, sex doesn't feel like it's on the table for me right now. Why? Go deeper. Okay, why is that? What do I feel in my body when I think about having sex right now? Like, do I feel a tension? Do I feel something holding? Do I feel cut off from my body? Like, what parts of my body do I feel cut off from? Just to be curious and to bring some aliveness to what's going on, because I know that in this sex negative, but also sex obsessed culture, we are taught that like a lot of us should be having sex all of the time. If we're not having sex, there's something wrong with us. And I'm not about that life. I really want for us to just like give ourselves as much space and grace as possible, as well as being curious about our experience. So I would put that there. And then the other piece, while, you know, you're doing this deep dive into the depths of whatever's coming up for you around this stuff, I would say to start small, you know, like to bring small connections into your body, and not from a sexual place, because I think for some folks, like sex is really charged. I know you know, when I'm in a particular space, like sex is just off the table. Like there's no affirmation that I can say. There's no Beyonce song that I can put on. It is like, nope, it's not happening tonight. So what can I offer myself in the realm of connection instead? And maybe it's not sexual. Maybe it's just sensual, you know, maybe. And by sensuality, I just mean coming into the sensual body, coming into your five senses, coming into a state where you're doing something to make your body feel good. And it's not about trying to do this so that you can eventually get to a particular point. Like, what does it feel like for you to do something that is just pleasure for pleasure's sake? Can you occupy that? Can you like be in that space with yourself? And mostly as a prayer to connection to yourself, you know, not for any other reason just to connect. And I think that the more that you do that, the more that you create a space and sort of a ritual of pleasure connection, of sensual connection with yourself, I think that those questions that I was asking earlier to help you get curious about what's going on within you become a little bit easier, because we have to get the body online in order to be able to like figure out what's going on with it. And, you know, we're not very adept at getting our bodies online. And it makes sense because we don't live in a world that tells us that we should prioritize what our bodies are saying to us. So yeah, I think start small and feel into the simple pleasure that you can experience in any given moment. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to bring this up because you brought it up. What for you is the difference between sexuality and sensuality, and how are they connected?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you asked that question, because I've been doing a lot of conversations lately about this because of my book coming out. And I'm realizing that people don't really know what sensuality is, or like they think that they do, but they don't. There's like a lot of like, I don't know, what is sensuality? And I feel that. I mean, when I first got into this work, when I saw the definition of sensuality, I didn't even see the definition of sensuality first. I heard people talking about what sensuality was, and it was relating to sex. So like, and in particular, it was relating to the ways that someone is externally viewing someone else who is in this space of sensuality, you know? So it was like a come hither look. It was like pouty lips. It was like sucking on a lollipop to try to titillate someone. Fun fact, you can go to like Google or something and just type in sensuality and look at the image section. And I think that will give you a really clear understanding of why folks are so confused, because I think for a lot of us, we think that sensuality is for somebody else's gaze. You know, it's something that we wear. It's a gesture that we do with our body. It's mannerisms that we have. And that's not to say that that's not true. I think that when you are connected to your body and your sensuality, that essence naturally comes out, and folks will want to see that. And maybe you even want other people to see that. So I'm in this space of like both and, where it's like, yes, and let's like think about the other archetype here, because I think that the ways that we think about sensuality has been really flattened because of our culture. And so one thing that's really helped me is to see that sensuality is not about the external. It's not about the clothes you wear. It's not about the hand cream that you buy. It's not about the ways that you move and contort your body. It's an internal experience. It's very personal. I see sensuality as something that has nothing to do with anybody else, but has everything to do with how you feel in your body, how you're occupying your body, as well as the ways that you are listening to your body. And one of the ways that I like to think about sensuality, and I wrote this in my book, Sensual Self, is that sensuality is a practice of paying attention with your senses. And it's like it's a practice of presence. Like the only way that you can be present enough to pay attention with your senses is you have to slow down. So a lot of us, in order for us to access our sensuality, to be within our bodies and to feel into our senses, we have to slow the fuck down. We have to figure out like, how can we slow our pace in order to feel into this moment? Like, and it can be as simple as like, what am I hearing right now? What am I looking at right now? Just going through the senses in that way. Whereas with sexuality, I feel like sexuality it's not that it's like 100% different, because I really do feel like they play with each other. I believe that you can't have the best sex of your life unless you have access and understanding to your sensuality, because again, we have sex with our bodies, you know? So, we can only have the best sex of our lives if we are fully in our bodies. And so I think that the work around sensuality plays such a big role in our ability to show up to our sex lives. And that's like one of the reasons why it's a foundational piece in the work that I do. It's one of the reasons why I ask folks, when we first start working together, what is your relationship to your body and what is your relationship to your pleasure? Because if you're not in your body, there's no way that you're going to be able to have those connections and that intimacy within the sexual place with other people.
Right.
So yeah, there's so much here and I could go on and on and on, but that's kind of how I see sensuality and how different it is.
Yes. I love that. I mean, what came up for me as you were speaking is that it's spiritual it's, you know, because we're in the moment and we're engaging with our senses, and through that comes a relationship. And I've been thinking so much about intimacy and about intimacy. What does that mean? What does it mean for self-intimacy?
Yes.
Because I think, again, I think there's a lot of activation around this topic, like sensuality, intimacy, vulnerability, because there's been so much trauma and so much pain, and because a lot of us don't feel safe. I mean, I could be here all day for all of the reasons why, but I love how you expressed it as like, when we're ready for it, it almost feels relatively simple. Sensuality. Like, it's not like this, you're not having to do jumping through hoops. You're just here.
Yeah.
And you're aware.
Yeah.
And you're holding space for all of the complexities. Like, you could be having a really rough day and you notice there's like a beautiful tree in the distance.
That's
and
right.
The leaves are waving and you're just here. You don't have to perform. You just have to experience. Mm-hmm. And so I love how you're describing it. And I think that it's something that anyone can do, you know, at any time, no matter what. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that. I needed to have you in the 2022 Many Moons Lunar Planner, because I've been like familiar with your work, and my interpretation of you, or like what you show, is one of very deep self-love and very deep self-regard. And it is a lover's year next year. And so, of course, I was thinking about self-love and relationships of all kinds. And I was wondering, like, how, like, am I accurate in describing that you hold yourself with a lot of self-love and love? And what does that, I want to get into that, because I've been unpacking that for me. Like, what does self-love mean for me? What does it look like? What does it feel like? What are the ingredients? Today, here, now, for you, what are some of the ingredients to a self-love practice or a self-regard, self-respect practice?
When you were speaking, I was thinking about something that I've been meditating on really this whole year, which is this idea of staying in union with myself and not abandoning myself. I think the way that I've heard, you know, self-love and self-care, I really hate how it's been co-opted by capitalism and, you know, like, buy this, self-care your way through blah, blah, blah with this candle. I mean, like, let's be real. Sometimes candles are really lovely and, you know.
Listen, I love a good scented candle. Yes, like, same, let's be real.
Same. But like, how are we bypassing actual self-care and actual self-regard by just being like, well, I did it. I purchased this candle. Like, for me, the deeper work and the work that's been really challenging for me is not abandoning myself, particularly when I'm in states where they're not very pleasurable, you know, like, you know, my work is so much about pleasure and sensuality and being in your body. And sometimes being in your body sucks. Sometimes like there's so much mental chatter that keeps you from being in that space. And one of the things that I've noticed that I do, that's my pattern, is that when I'm feeling anxious, which is an undesirable sensation for me, I leave myself. I'm like, well, you shouldn't be feeling this. So why are you doing this?
Yes.
And there's this chatter that is very rude and that doesn't really help me come back to myself anyway. It creates this really annoying loop that just continues to go on and on. And so what I've been trying to do as like the supreme act of self-love and self-regard is, what does it look like for me to love myself even in those moments where I can't stand myself?
Yes.
And to not flee, to not leave,
yes,
but to stay with myself and offer myself love. That shit is hard. Like, that is probably the hardest work that I'm attempting to do right now in my process. But for me, like, everything else is just fluff, you know? Mm-hmm. I want to get to the core of what is making me leave myself in the first place, is of what is making me feel like I am not allowed to take up space or be in the emotional state that I am. Like, what does it look like for me to be like, yes, I'm anxious and I love you. I'm sorry. You know, whew, even just saying that, I'm like, it's an edge for me. It's still something that I'm moving into, but yeah.
That resonates so much for me. I have so much to say. I wrote culture and love and labor and contortion and capitalism and race and gender. It's like defiant to love yourself in an original or unique, authentic way, you know? And like, me loving myself doesn't often look like what society tells me love should look like, right? Which is the candle or the great outfit or the bouquet of flowers, or, and not, again, not that those aren't that thing.
Right, right.
But a lot of times it looks like me saying no, mm-hmm, like to things, and that maybe I, in quotes, should be saying yes to. And like, for me, what I've been doing lately is similar to what you shared, in that what I will normally do is, when I catch myself in a state of bad or like undesirable feelings, mm-hmm, for me lately, literally just this week, so here we are, it's been jealousy, which is a really hard one for me, because I don't have it often. And so when I have it, it's sort of my like, it's my, one of my most undesirable of the undesirables. Like, I can do grief, I can do sorrow, but like, I can do even anger, but like, jealousy is really rough for me. And I'm still sort of trying to figure out why. And in the past, what I've done is I've sort of been like, this means you're really out of alignment, so just get back in alignment. Don't go there. Yeah. Like, don't be with it. Just be like, okay, this is the symbol that you're off. You need more sleep. Like, you need to get back into your practice, like your meditation, your exercise, whatever. And this time I've been like letting myself not like intellectualize it, not look for the symbolism of it, but to really go there in the like, and underneath that for me has been a lot of core needs that are like really related to me not always feeling like I'm safe enough or good enough to receive those. So I've been really like, oh, it's amazing what happens when you stay with yourself through really uncomfortable, hard emotions and sensations. Mm-hmm. It's amazing there's so much intuition comes up. And to your share, part of me thinks I'm being petty or childish or like not feminist or whatever I've told myself, but how can I be compassionate? How can I embrace myself? How can I hold myself? Like, how can I let myself go there with care, mm-hmm, you know? And it has been, like you said, it's like it's difficult.
Yes.
It's difficult. It's not like, oh, instant gratification, now I'm healed, but it is a different way for me to be with harder things for me to be with. And I've been seeing how a little bit more and a little bit more and a little more curiosity could be really kind of groundbreaking for me personally. So I'm glad you shared that too.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a really, really big one. I think for me, it stems to this belief that I've been really trying to parse out. I don't even know if it's going to be clear here, but one of the reasons why I run from myself in those experiences or in those moments where it's just so much is, you know, I am afraid of being bad. And I think our culture has shown us what happens to people who are bad, to people who aren't good. And you know, I've been really digging deep into trauma responses this year and digging deep into the way trauma shows up in the body, as well as transformative justice. And mostly from this place of like thinking about the folks that do harm, and rather than seeing them as like, these are evil degenerates, throw them under the jail, like seeing the full picture and sort of the both and of it, which is like, yes, these people have done harm to you, but they are also a product of this world that we live in, and how I'm trying to do that toward others, but I also want to do that for myself as well, because it's very easy for me to be like, why are you being anxious? This is ridiculous. How much money have you spent on, you know, your meds this year? And like, you should be this, and this. I feel like when I'm speaking to myself in those ways, it feels very much like there's an inner prisoner warden inside of me. And I'm like, oh no, I don't want to talk to myself like that. There needs to be a space that I live in this world, in this fucked up world that we live in, where I'm not enacting harm upon myself. Like,
that's
there's a lot of harm that's being enacted upon me, but I don't want to enact harm upon myself. And so, yeah, staying in union with myself is not just about like raising my vibration. It's also about like decolonizing the voice that is inside of me that really stems from white supremacy.
That's what it is. Yeah. It's like that inner police officer. Yeah. And then when you like go there, you're like, oh, they're really terrified.
Yes.
Like that is a control tactic. That is like something that was created to try to keep them safe. And it's like literally doing the opposite. I've also been really fascinated with, okay, it's really easy and route for me to resist and like say what I don't want, but what do I want to create? Like what garden, what ecosystem of love do I want to create? And so for me, a lot of it is around like being seen and being heard and being understood and being loved for who I am, not how I am behaving in transaction to someone or what I think they want me to be or whatever. And so I've been trying to foster those moments of like seeing myself and understanding myself. And I'm wondering if you have your little ecosystem of Evian self-love, you know, like garden of love.
Yeah. One practice that I've been trying to do is really feel myself, you know, and like whenever I say this, I'm always like, not in like the Nicki Minaj, Beyonce type of way. I'm actually like feeling my body, you know, feeling my emotions, feeling my sensations. I move so fast. My brain is always churning. And it's very easy for me to get trapped up here in my head. And one practice for me has been like, okay, can I drop that energy down into my belly? And can I feel what's really here? You know? And typically, it's things that like I don't want to feel, you know. Lately it's been grief that's been coming up a lot for me. And there's a part of me that's like, no, let's not. We got a book tour and stuff. Like, we don't have time for grief. So an act of love for me has been like, Evian, you have emotions. You need to feel them and you need to give them space to feel you. And to just trust that in that process of feeling them, because I think one thing that comes up for me, and I'm sure it comes up for a lot of folks, is if I allow myself to feel these emotions, I'll live here. Like I'm going to spiral down into the pits of hell, and I'm never going to be able to claw myself out of it. And I have that fear as well. But I've noticed that the more that I give myself even just tiny moments where I can feel into my emotions. Maybe it's not even just like, okay, I'm going to sit here and feel grief for 5 minutes, but more like, okay, I'm feeling grief in my belly right now. Let me just breathe into my belly, give that space some softness, and then I'm going to move on with my day. Like that feels so much more accessible than doing a breathwork session for an hour, than crying and snotting all over the place for the next hour. Like sometimes we need to take small, tiny pieces and just be where we're at with it. So I've been trying to do that as much as I can. And then also I've been really trying to remind myself that like I have so much support. you know? And I think sometimes for me, it can get so dense up in the mind, and I can get so disconnected and dissociated from myself that I also get dissociated from the fact that, like, I am loved, I am protected, I have a horde of ancestors and spirit guides and guardian angels who've got my back. I've got friends and family who love me, and feeling that support from other people reminds me of the support that I also carry within my own self that I can anchor into. Yeah, that's been really powerful for me, especially as someone who has had a hard time with community lately and feeling like community and family is just weird for me right now. Being reminded that, like, okay, I may not have hundreds of friends, but I at least have a core group of folks that, like, I know no matter who I am, what I've done, they're going to love me regardless. They're going to see the best in me. And that allows me to also see the best in myself in some ways.
And that's so lovers too.
It really is. It really is.
And in your piece, you talk about the binary, and you talk about how we are all innately fluid and the binary flattens us. Mm. You wrote into lifeless vectors of ourselves. And in the piece, you talk about your non-binariness, you talk about the both and of all of this. And I'm hoping, like, you've been so generous in our conversation, and I'm hoping if you wouldn't mind trying to sort of maybe give us a little offering into how you've been able to hold all of the different parts. One of my cosmic homework assignments for this Hierophant year has been really trying to observe myself when I get into the either or, or if then, like those kinds of good, bad, binary thinking that I unfortunately do, as we all do. Yes. And so your piece for the planner really embodies so much of some of the greater messages of the lover's archetype. And so I was hoping, because the good, bad, control, trauma, scarcity stuff, to me, it's all wrapped up in this binary. Yeah. So I'm sort of hoping you could kind of share your thoughts on that and maybe a piece of your process around unraveling.
Yeah. I mean, it's a process that is ever present for me. I would love to work this out in my lifetime, but I feel like I'm going to be on my deathbed figuring it out. I mean, God willing, you know, I die when I'm like 103. That would be wonderful. You know, this is something that is still really alive with me now. And I'm thinking back to when I wrote that piece. It was during a period where, like, I'd recently come out as non-binary. And so it was really alive for me to think about, like, to think about myself occupying this liminal space at all times. And how freeing that is, especially for someone like me who is very much like black or white, good or bad, you're either this or you're that. Like, you're not allowed to occupy that middle space, or you're not allowed to, like, fluctuate within that middle space throughout the day. It's been really lovely for me to think about myself as a being, an energy that is all of the things and none of them at the same time, in a world that is constantly trying to nail me down with labels and is trying to, I mean, I think labels can be really good in some ways, but in other ways they can really flatten us and make us feel like, well, if I label myself in this way, then that means that I'm that forever. A really great example of this that I've been moving into is I recently came out, and I hate even saying came out because it's like, it's so ridiculous that we even have to, that we live in a world where coming out is a thing. But I recently came out publicly as someone who's on the ACE spectrum. And for me, that was a really big deal because of the work that I do and because of how much ignorance there is around asexual people. And I've been feeling into what it's like for me to use a term that feels so right for who I am, while also feeling that fear of, like, well, if I'm asexual, then all of these dark things, or it's sort of like there's this weight I feel that is put on me with that label, with most labels, but with this label in particular because it's so fresh. And I've been trying to think of myself as someone who occupies particularly my ace identity, not as like, I'm asexual and that is the thing. It's like, today I feel very ace. Tomorrow I might not feel very ace because everything around my sexual desire and my libido and my ability to be in my body depends on what's happening in my external and internal world. And so what does it look like for me to give myself space to like use these particular labels as like touchstones, but to not super identify with them and to know that like nothing is permanent, everything is changing. Yeah. I've been doing a lot of interviews lately and folks have asked me like, how do you identify? And, or like, tell me more about yourself. And I'm like, God, who am I today? I mean, tomorrow I'm going to be a different person. I know it, you know? So there's something very freeing for me. And it allows me to have more space for possibility within my expression and in my beingness and in my work and in my relationships and in the ways that I access my spirituality when I can be in liminal space with myself and to not take this so seriously, you know? Yeah, it's the word gaseous just came to my mind. I don't know why, but it feels very much like that, you know?
Yeah, I was also wondering if like you could share how, you know, we've spoken about how like labels can be really constricting. And also I'm wondering what about you wanting to discuss and share that you are on the ace spectrum. What about that is liberating to, like, what about that was like, you were like, this feels good. I was just curious. I'm curious about that.
Yeah. I mean, it felt really good for me because for so long, I have been trying to put myself into this fixed box that just did not work for me. And I think a lot of us, based on the clients that I've worked with, the students that I've facilitated, within our sexuality, a lot of us are trying to fit ourselves into a box that just doesn't fit. And we do, we live in a culture that tells us that we have to be a particular way sexually. And if we are not that way, we are sick, there's something wrong with us, we need to go to the doctor so that we can fit this standard of sexual performance, sexual desire. And I bought into that. I mean, all of us do, right? Like this is the world that we live in. And so to say that I am on the ace spectrum, to identify as an asexual person is me saying like, I desire differently and that's okay. Like my sexual desire doesn't look like what I've been taught it should look like. It has nuance, you know, it's not like factory model, one size fits all. Like it really is something that is alive within me and is my responsibility to catch and to cultivate and to be in relationship with. And I really like that. I also, there's so much around asexuality and there's so much ignorance and so much misinformation. And so me identifying as this, I think creates possibility models for other people. And actually, when there's a piece that came out about asexuality with Angela Chin in The Atlantic, where I was interviewed by her and she was asking me about, you know, the way that I identify and how my aceness shows up. It was interesting after that piece came out, I got so many people who were like, wow, so I'm ace. It's like, because my experience is very similar to yours. And thank you for being able to like give me language and to help me find community of folks where I don't feel less alone. So there's something really beautiful about that. And like for me, my asexuality really ties into my gender. You know, like for me to be ace feels very much like feeling non-binary. And my sexuality really plays into my gender as well, you know? So for me, it's like coming to this realization and really embracing this part of me has allowed me to like just put more pieces to the puzzle together. And I'm like, oh, wow, it all makes sense. And there's something about that that feels really celebratory for me. You know, like I'm not trying to find myself in definitions or realizations of myself that other people have created for me. I'm like literally choosing who I want to be. And I'm literally embracing every core and authentic part of myself. And that feels, that is an act of resistance. That is an act of liberation.
There's this incredible quote that you wrote in your piece for the Many Moons 2022 edition that I really wanted to share, because it's just like I was rereading it and I was just, wow, I wrote this down. You write, "I think about how my sexuality is more like a circle than it is a line from point A to point B. I think about how differently I desire and how much nuance I require when it comes to my arousal. I also think about how, when it comes to healing my sexuality, I am neither departing nor arriving. I am becoming." It's just really beautiful. I just was like, this is so good. And I think it's a perfect segue into your book that you have coming out.
Yeah.
That I'm so excited to dig into. Can you share a bit? No spoilers, of course, but can you share a little bit about this project that I'm going to assume you've been working on it for years?
Yeah. Yeah. Sensuality has been a core piece of my work. And it, from day one, I think because sexuality was so contentious for me, and there was a lot of charge and a lot of layers that I needed to dig in order to get to the sex piece. But sensuality was always pretty easy for me. I've always been a sensual person. I can remember being a young kid and being really fascinated with my body and fascinated with what I could see and touch and textures. I'm very tactile. And so, you know, that was something that was, I think people try to get that out of me because there is a connotation of someone with a particular body that if they are feeling themselves in that way, that they're fast, you know? And that was something that I heard a lot, that my sensuality was tied to me being fast or over-sexualized or things like that. So for me, sensuality has been a piece that's been with me for a while. I just needed to decolonize it and make it my own and really define it for who I am. And I want other people to explore that too. And so that's why I wrote my book. It's called Sensual Self, and it's actually a guided journal that people can work through. There's some pieces in there from me about, you know, tips along the way and a little bit of like my philosophy around sensuality. But mostly I see this book as being a manual that you get to write for yourself that identifies you and connects you and roots you into your sensuality and has you define it on your own terms. And so Sensual Self is a book that has lots of questions. It's meant to be journaled, like written in. And it also has exercises as well, because I was thinking about this, like for a book about sensuality, I don't want you to just think about sensuality with your brain. I want you to enact sensuality with your body. Like that feels really important for me. And so the exercises in it will give you an opportunity to feel sensuality out with your own body and come to your own explorations and understandings about your sensuality with curiosity and also with play, because sensuality is fun, you know, and sometimes it's not fun. Like I really want to hold space for the fact that like sometimes when we are digging into our sensual selves and connecting with ourselves, there's a lot of things that don't feel easy for us to connect to. And, you know, I don't want for folks to think that sensuality is all flowers and juicy fruits and, you know, things that make us feel good. Like sometimes being with our sensual selves means that we have to be with the parts of us that we have been taught not to sit with, you know, coming back into union with ourselves. So I'm really excited about this book. It was such a labor of love to write. And I'm honestly like, I'm so excited to see what is going to come through for folks when they take the time to go through this book, because like, you know, I think about who I was when I was getting into this work. And for me, it wasn't enough to just like read a bunch of concepts about sexuality and sexual healing. I had to carve that path myself with action, you know, with intention, with actually sitting down and thinking about like, who am I? Who do I want to be? What does it look like for me to be that person? What's getting in the way of me being that person? And so I've seen the beauty of what happens when we give ourselves that space to ask ourselves those questions. Like I've seen what opens up in the realm of possibility when we give ourselves that space and time. And so I feel really confident in saying that this book is going to change your life because it's going to have you coming into your body and getting you literate in the language of what your body speaks to you. So yeah, that's my book, and I'm really excited about it.
That's so exciting. I think it is coming at exactly the right time. I was also curious, who did you write this book for?
I mean, I wrote it for anyone who has a body, you know? I wrote it for anyone who has a body who has ever questioned whether or not they are enough, who has questioned whether or not they have the ability or are worthy enough to feel pleasure. I've written this people for folks who have bodies that have been harmed and have been traumatized and have felt like because of those experiences that they've had, that their bodies don't belong to them. And I want this book to be a ritual that helps folks get back to themselves and back to their pleasure. I also wrote this book for me, like little baby Evian, because if homegirl had had this book when she was like 13, 14, 15 years old, I would have saved so much money on therapy. I know I would have, you know, and that's not shade. It's just true. and I'm someone who loves questionnaires. I love being asked questions and self-inquiry. I mean, I've been keeping a journal since I was 7. So it's very much a part of my process to dive deep into myself and to ask myself questions and to hold space for myself. And I did that so much with other things, like what's your favorite color and who do you want to be when you grow up? But no one was asking me those questions about sex or sexuality or my body or pleasure. And so I wrote this book for myself, for the younger version of myself who didn't get those questions.
Yes, I love that answer so much. Before we go, I wanted to ask you one last question. What lunar phase do you feel like you're in right now?
The phase of the moon that we're in right now, the waning phase, it feels very, very much, I think we're about to have a new moon in a couple of days. And I'm very much feeling into that. I'm very, very much feeling like there's, like I'm going into a period, I'm actually in a period of darkness and lying fallow. And that even though there's this period of darkness, that it's there's seeds that are being planted for later for some brightness. But right now it's just like, I'm in the dark cosmic soup of the waning moon.
Yes. I love that share. The waning moon is one of my faves. So like we were saying, doesn't always feel amazing, but it almost always feels necessary.
Yeah. And there's so much information in this period. And that even though it's hard and sometimes it feels impossible, I'm always very grateful for the waning moon because it allows me to get access to information that I don't think that I would be able to. So I'm open to receiving whatever those messages are. And also I'm just like, yeah, I need to rest. You know, it's time for me to rest.
How can folks find you? Where can they get your book? If they want to connect, if they want to be on your news, like I will, of course, link it all in the show notes, but just share now for folks to hear.
Yeah. So my book, Sensual Self, is going to be out December 7th. You can buy the book wherever you want, wherever you can find books. I have a soft spot for independent booksellers. So if you would like to get a book, please go to an indie bookstore. I also have a podcast called Sensual Self as well. I
love it. So good.
Thank you. Thank you. You can.
We'll link to it. We'll link to it. I love it.
You can find that anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can also find me on Instagram. I'm there. Hate it, love it at the same time at evian.whitney. And my website, evianwhitney.com, is where you can join my newsletter and stay connected with me.
Yay. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm sending you so much love. It was such a true pleasure and an honor.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me on. It was great to chat with you.
That's our show for the week. Wasn't it great? I loved this conversation so, so much. Thank you for rating, reviewing, subscribing, forward to a friend. Thank you, thank you, thank you for supporting this podcast on Patreon, for supporting this endeavor financially. It is more meaningful than I can express here. I hope you feel my love and gratitude for all of you. I hope all of my patrons have gotten caught up with the secret episodes as well. There's a lot of goodness in there. It's like another sort of mini secret podcast happening there. Until next time, sending you all so much love. Bye. Moonbeaming is brought to you by The Moon Studio. We are created and hosted by Sarah Faith Gottesdiener. Editing is by Caitlin George Parker, and the sound is by Will Owen. Thank you for your support.
Witches in the autumn leaves, collecting things for jars. Witches.